This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. In the 1980s, when I was hacking away brush on a 200-acre homestead in Wayback Country, Jule Dervais and his family stayed home. They turned a city lot in Pasadena, California, into a food-producing mini-farm with a philosophy that anyone can do it. The Dervais family have defined a new way of sustainable city living. Jules Dervais, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hello, Alex. Thanks for having me on.
So, how is the harvest this year?
Okay, well, I say it's up and down. We're experiencing shocks this year that we've kind of never had before. So it's a new experience for us. We thought we had our act together. That's always the optimism in me, but we've seen quite a bit of problems. There's been of course the weather gyrations, but we've had more than our share of downs. Looks like it'll be a down year. We have up and downs for the last 10 years, but this one will be when it gets to the end, when we tally the produce January 1st, it'll probably be one of our lower years.
And how much do you normally produce in a year, just to give our listeners an idea?
Okay, well, we started out with 2,300 pounds back in 2001, and our highest we got was in 2010 was 7,000 pounds of fruits and vegetables on a tenth of an acre garden. And in between, it's been all over the place. But this, what bothers me now is we should be getting better, and yet we can't really control the weather. So it's like it's new to us what nature throws at us.
It's terrible here in British Columbia. The spring was just so late and so wet and so cold. A lot of people are complaining they just couldn't get their crops to fruit properly and other problems.
That's correct. I mean, we're the same thing here, except in the other way. We got too dry. Everything that we have is almost extreme. So they call it global weirding instead of global warming. It's you get it all around the country, all around the world, is that there's no one mean temperature or low or high where you can average it out. It's way spiking all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least we're not in Texas where they don't get any rain at all.
Yeah, they really spike in bad there. I mean, with the wildfires now, they're paying for years of drought. On top of that, they get fire, yeah.
Well, you're still talking about a lot of food this year. What do you do with it all?
Well, we tried it. We started out trying to feed our family, myself and my three adult children here. We've been working on feeding ourselves, but we did pretty well. And we're in the city, so this in Southern California, they have a lot of these trendy restaurants. So we were able to convert some of our surplus vegetables and produce into cash, so we can buy stuff that we can't grow on the farm here. So there's a little bit of a side business. It's when it's up and down like this to this year, the side business has to suffer, but we still feed ourselves, you know. That's what the blessing is.
Yes, indeed. Well, I want to get back to the sort of big picture of what this all means, but can we start with a few tips? There are people out there who want to do what you're doing. Let's start with the basics, which is soil. How should we prepare city soil and make it so it's productive year after year?
Right. Well, that's a good question, and it depends on what soil you start with. We started with sort of an adobe type soil that became hard as a rock when the sun would bake it. And so we had to amend it a lot. We started composting almost 25 years ago when I bought the property. We wouldn't throw away any of our waste, especially our kitchen waste. We would bury it, and it came home that the soil got better. Some places are better than others, but in the city, you know, you have to take you can't do too much. You're stuck with what you have. And so we've basically composted everything that we could ever get our hands on. And as so much as we brought in wood chips from the outside, and people throw away here, they throw away straw, hay bales that they use for decoration around Halloween and Thanksgiving. We go and collect that, and we add to the soil. Now, you can purchase organic mixes now, which we didn't have to have available a couple years back, but now they're available at nursery centers if you get the organic compost.
And some people, they're just renting, so they don't have a lot of choices, and they've got big asphalt driveways and paved patios. Can they still use that space?
Well, yeah, that's what we have that too. That's what we started out with. We had a big 40-foot by 40-foot slab in the backyard. They used it as a business. He had a trucking business, so the person we bought the house from. And we stuck with a lot of concrete, a lot of places that are small. We turned to container gardening, and they have a new container gardening situation now where they have self-watering pots and self-watering boxes. And so you can start a little mini garden on decks, on patios, and in on concrete areas. And it, and you can definitely get some salads and some you know, at least tomatoes and stuff that is, you know, very good for homegrown produce. You know, you can get that right away without the land. You know, if you're fortunate enough to have some land, even along the fence line, you can grow beans, pole beans, and squash along the fence line. So you're got to use all available space, but definitely look into containers.
And it must take a lot of water to grow so much, especially in Southern California. Can you give us any tips about your water management?
Yes, the watering situation here is a challenge, always will be, looks like, until we get enough rain. But one of the things we do is we plant closer together than you see out in the fields. The field spacing, when they normally give you the spacing in the books, how far apart to space the plants, that's basically for tractors and running equipment down the rows. We plant closer together, so we hope to have the leaves touch to form a canopy, which would then shade the ground below it and create a microclimate so that there's some cooler and damper weather below the surface. And we're trying to do what they call a food forest. So you want to get as close as you can without getting too much, too damp. And so it's a lot of experimentation. But what we do is water in the mornings or in the evenings so that there's no evaporation. And we hand water, and we also use what they call ollas. I don't know if you've seen that on our website.
No, I haven't seen it.
But they're old. They're clay. There's an old form of drip irrigation, about 2,000 to 3,000 years old, that they plant a unglazed clay pot in the ground, and they fill it with water, and it seeps out as needed. So it saves overhead watering, and goes right to the drip zone of the plant underneath the. In the root zone, and it's underneath the plant real close by, so it just feeds that plant, so you don't have many weeding problems too. So it's a good form. We're heavy into conservation of water since we don't have much. Now other people, they obviously have the opposite problem. They have too much water, so you know it's always a challenge.
You're listening to Radio EcoShock every Sunday night at 10:30 p.m. right here on Green 960 San Francisco.
Oh, this is good stuff. You are listening to Jules Dervais on Radio EcoShock with his three adult children. The Dervais family raises inspiring amounts of food right in the city, and this could be the way we feed ourselves in the future, I think. What is the value of doing this for people? It's got to be bigger than just feeding yourself, as important as that is.
Right. Well, it began that personal need to take care of your own needs and getting your food directly. You know, instead of going through all the middlemen and who's your farmer and where is your farmer and how are they farming? This was an empowerment process of taking back this in our own hands, which we lost over the centuries. But it's gone more than that, because what we've done is change our lifestyle from city people disconnected from nature. And now, I mean, we are so in touch with nature. We're watching nature all the time. You know, when it's like your future is bound up with our connection with nature. So you have to take care of a lot of things that you never thought you'd let somebody else take care of. You let maybe the experts take care of. And now it's become myself and my children's lifestyle to just change the way we live and how we can survive for the future.
Yeah, well, your website says Path to Freedom. You have an award-winning short film on YouTube called Homegrown Revolution. It sounds deep and political, social change. How does that come from growing your own food? Could you talk a bit more about that?
Yes, well, you know, food being the essence of life, you can't get any more real than that. And we took back control of that. See, it had escaped us over the years by the generations. My parents let go of it, and then I was letting go of it when I was in college. You know, I had no idea that I would want to, you know, do this for a living, you know, this is my life. And it also has now freed us from all the other political powers and corporate powers that are out there. We look at it as weaning ourselves back to a strong, self-reliant family, the way the nation was founded and how people became strong in the past. They were strong units, individually strong, and they formed a strong nation. So this is the real, you know, politics of this is that the strength is in the individual growing their own, and in a family situation growing their own food. It's like you become now a core, a cell that is very strong, and that you can build a strong units around that too, you know, if you get a bunch of people doing the same thing.
Well, let's see if we can squeeze in just a couple more tips for people who want to do it. To get so much production from your city lot, you must be using vertical layering. Can you talk to us about some of the plants you grow and how they fit in with one another?
Okay. Yeah, well, certainly with such a small space, we have to take advantage of everything that we have. So we even grow produce down our driveway, down our fence line, in the front yard. We do a lot of use of arboring and trellising. So I mentioned before that we use fence lines are critical. Plants grow up. Some are vining plants. So we have a lot of grapes that give a shade at the same time that we had a good harvest of grapes. It's like it's a challenge to see if you can grow on not just horizontally but vertically. Now, in on a field, you get your choice of all the spaces that you want. But in a city, you have to look at it like, well, how about above here? So if you see a picture of my place, which we have a lot on the internet and plus on Google, you can Google us, and see where how we live. But a lot of it's in the vertical space. So plus I told you about the containers. We tucked containers in around even in shady places. We can, get some produce out of the shade. So we're using the whole lot, sides of lot. You have to be able to determine where the plant grows best. So the best thing you can do is to have a mobile space. So sometimes the container gardens are your advantage. They're not limited to the ground. So you can kind of move them around and see where they thrive, see where they do best. And it's always an experiment like that.
Well, you raised the problem of global weirding, and I think there's two aspects of that I'd really love to get your expertise on it. One is, how do you manage your garden during a heat wave so that it survives?
Wow. Yeah, we had that. We're doing it right now, by the way. We've had hundreds just recently. And then what I try to do is I try to shade the plants so they don't get stressed by the heat. So what we'll do is we'll grow some tall plants that'll give a little bit of, they like the heat. Like say tomatoes like the heat and corn likes the heat and some pole beans like the heat. And then behind it, just in a little nook behind it, I can grow some plants that need shade. They might need light, but they can't stand this blazing heat that they have. So we have to adjust it for shade. We can grow things in shade in a hot climate. So this is like a work in progress. We're always looking for ways to grow more. And one of the things to get out of the heat is to find a shading spot. Also, we have some shade cloth that we hang over beds every once in a while when it gets really, really tough out here. It'll cook the plants with the blazing sun. So we'll put a shade cloth on top of the beds.
Right. And another problem that can come up for other folks in other parts of the country is they think they're doing fine, but suddenly there's this really strong, gusty wind is threatening to blow everything down and everything over. Any ideas for that one?
Fortunately, we don't have that too much except in the spring and the fall. Most of the time we don't have weather in the Southern California. It's known as, kind of like no weather at all here, just hot or hotter. That doesn't have much wind. So what we have, and we're in a city, so we don't get these, we have wind breaks. So it's not like living out in the country where the wind picks up over miles and miles and miles and can really cause you trouble. Yeah, I don't have the experience with the wind, but we do have block walls, fences around. And we do have our own windbreaks. I know in the open fields of the prairies and everything, they would plant trees as windbreaks to cut the force of the wind. You slow it down. You'll probably never eliminate it, but you'll slow it down. So, yeah, you can tuck things around around the buildings. The building acts as a windbreak. So if it's a windy side, then you grow something on the other side of the, take it out of the wind. Or build yourself some sort of break, like of a fence of, bamboo or something like that, a bamboo reed fence. You can slow the wind down. I don't know if you can completely eliminate it, but you can slow it down. And then we trellis our plants. We put in stakes so we keep them upright so they also have support so the wind can't blow them down.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with Jules Gervais, a pioneer in developing a sustainable way of life in the city. Jules, what should listeners know if they hope to get a little extra income from surplus produce?
Okay, well, that would be great if you could do that. What I first would suggest is they grow what they needed for themselves. Like, if you grow what you like, first of all, and if you're fortunate enough to have some neighbors and some extended family or maybe a church group, are at work that you belong to, you can start to get some of your produce into that arena by asking them if they would like to buy from you. So, you know, we didn't have that situation here, so we went to the restaurants here in Southern California because there was a lot of restaurants. But if you're able to have neighbors that would buy from you, or your family, share the produce with your family, then definitely get them on board, and they'll love you for it, and they'll ask you for it, so you can almost be guaranteed that they'll want more. Then if you do better there, you can maybe go out and try a local small family type restaurant, no big chains, but you can see if they would want some of your fresh produce. And if you're in a area like we are, the trendy area, they love this stuff. I mean, this they can't keep enough of it on the shelves. This is the trend today: local, fresh, organic, and you can fetch a premium price. So what we do is we don't grow volume, but we grow enough small stuff, but that is so valuable that we can raise the price on this, on the produce, that we call them heirloom specialty crops.
And as you know too well, in California, as the economy sours, literally millions of people are starting to think homegrown food is better than money in the bank. Tell us about the resources you offer on your website and maybe how to use them.
Okay, well, we have quite an extensive list of website sources that you can use. First of all, our blog is called littlehomesteadinthecity.org, and that's like a daily journal of all the problems we face and how we're doing. But we also have social networks, free social networks called freedomgardens.org, which then connects you with your, basically sometimes you don't know it, but you might be talking to one of your neighbors in your backyard that share their information. So I might not be able to tell you about the weather up there, but certainly somebody on Freedom Gardens might be able to be helpful. We also have a part where we use barnyardsandbackyards.org, and that's for people that want to keep animals in the city. We have a store called urbanhomesteadsupply.com. That's something that you can find out what we use on the farm here. We can get you in touch with the produce and the products that we use. And then, of course, our film, Homegrown Revolution, that you mentioned, that's always inspirational to get everybody up and wanting to plant. Oh, yeah, and then, okay, the main one is urbanhomestead.org.
Right. Okay, well, that's quite a list. What I'm going to do, I'm going to put it in my blog as well at ecoshock.info. So, listeners, if you didn't manage to write that down, but certainly if you start off at urbanhomestead.org, you're going to get somewhere. Jules Dervais, life keeps on changing. What is coming up for you and your family? Do you have some new projects in mind?
Well, right now we have this problem. We've had too much compost, so we're just maxed out our place. We've got a mound of compost that is needs getting to, and we're trying to find more people that are in this area locally that want to share. We have a front porch farm stand that if they have produce, we can offer it as exchange for something else. So we're kind of sharing our way of life on the front porch. And then the next thing would be for my grown children to actually do this themselves. So we're looking at a community of like-minded people that want to do the same lifestyle that we're living, and maybe do it 365 days a year, 24/7 days a week. We're trying to change the way we live, and so the next step would be more like getting a community together.
And as we wrap up, is there any message you really want to leave with our listeners?
Oh yeah, I would say start something now, because you never know where it's going to take you. Sometimes people maybe delay it. They might not have the perfect circumstance, and nobody does have it. So you have to start. That's first of all, and then stay with something. There's adversity along the way, and there's problems along the way, but you get to choose your problems. I mean, there's problems in the world, problems on the stock market. This way of life has problems too, but you stay with it, and hopefully you become smarter, and share with others. That's what we're looking for, is a common spirit of sharing, like they did in the old days, the old spirit of, you know, it's the neighborliness and people helping each other, not waiting for an agency or a corporation or government or anything. It's more like self-reliance, and definitely go out and be in touch with your own family and then with your neighbors. So we're looking for everyone to start sharing.
It's always a pleasure to hear from leaders and innovators in any field. And when it comes to food self-sufficiency in the city, that is the Dervais family. There's Jules, Justin, Anais, Jordan. And to find out more, you can go to urbanhomestead.org. Jules Gervais, thank you so much for joining us on Radio EcoShock.
Well, Alex, I enjoyed it. I hope to talk to you again, and I wish you well in everybody's, and also everybody in their endeavors, too.
Okay, I'm Alex Smith at EcoShock.org.